Hello, it's Fake Nukes Phil coming to you from deep inside the Soviet States of America once again. And this Sunday, once again, I'm joined by Robert the Bruce Gorman in Florida with his friend Walter and Nimblehorse from Scotland. Hail victory, brothers.
Hail victory.
Yeah, so Robert the Bruce, how are things in Florida?
Good. Putting everything in its right place. You know, I got a couple of vehicles I'm working on and straightening them out. Things need maintained like our bodies, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Discipline, put everything in the right place. So I'm working on those. And this is my friend Walter here. He's across the street.
Good. Yes. Nice to meet you, Walter.
Well, nice. Phil, I've talked to you before, maybe a month or 6 weeks ago. I said already one time in the past.
Yes, I remember. Nice Air Force hat you have there. So were you ever discharged from the Air Force?
No. And okay. When you said you're going to talk about my boss today,
yeah.
My boss isn't the United States Corporation. My boss is the original government under President Kennedy.
That, oh, okay.
Without the yellow fringe flag, that's the boss I have to this day, sir.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because the yellow fringe flag is the maritime law, right?
It's a corporation, yes, with the artificial person running it. Yes, sir. That's the problem.
Oh, okay.
That's our problem today.
Yeah.
And how are you, Phil?
Oh, we're good. Yeah, Rocky's here. He's being part of today. He's licking his paws, and he's being part of. And we're just getting through. I just got back from Tijuana yesterday, got a new tooth. So I'm feeling really good about my new tooth.
Wow.
And it took me about five trips down there to get the tooth fitted. So it's an implant. So, you know, so now I don't have a big hole in my mouth anymore. So that's good. So, and Marcus, how are things in Scotland?
Yeah, we're good in Scotland.
Yeah.
So, and lots of the summer, so I've just been on vacation for a few days.
Happy holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we're having a 3-day weekend right now. It's Labor Day, I guess.
How much that tooth cost you, Phil?
$1,200.
$1,200
an implant. Yeah. Yeah.
They take Soviet money, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. They love taking Soviet money. Yeah.
But,
greenbacks. Yeah. Yeah. So, Walter, we talk about the Air Force a lot. Well, mostly we talk about the Navy and the stunt that they pulled out there in Pearl Harbor. And, but the Air Force has been involved in some whoppers too, like, the Enola Gay thing and the Hiroshima thing and, the stealth bomber thing. Well, we know it doesn't carry nukes. So I know so there's some things, they've been lying to us for a long time, and I'm sure you've seen your share of it there in the service, and lots of no talk abouts and lots of things that you can't talk about, and you know, yeah. But we just kind of. Mostly we feel that we brought a curse on ourselves for starting the biggest war in human history, and we installed communism in the Asian theater and the European theater. We went over there and helped our Chinese friends defeat Japan, and we helped our Soviet friends defeat Germany, and so we made the whole world communist, and that's been America's gift to the world is communism. And so that's why I start every show by saying deep inside the Soviet States of America, because communism or Marxism is not a economic system. It is not a labor system. What it is, it's the destruction of Western Europe. And that's what Karl Marx started communism all about, was to destroy Europe. And we have accomplished that. What we're doing now is we're breeding out the last remnant. If you go over to Germany or France today, it looks very different than it used to look. And we're breeding out the last remnant of Western civilized people and making them turn into Muslims, make them turn into Mongoloids or something. That's what General Patton said. He said that we're going to turn Europe into Mongoloids. And that's what we did.
And a litmus test, Mr. Phil, who was the greatest anti-communist who stood up against these bastards?
Oh, yes. That is Adolf Hitler, who led the anti-Bolshevik movement in Europe. And that's why he had so many people join his cause, is because he was the only one who was fighting Bolshevism. And millions of people from around the 170 countries came and joined Adolf Hitler to fight Bolshevism. And that's sadly, Bolshevism won. And Bolshevism likes to change its name. It like any gangster, they always reinvent themselves. They put on a new mask. And so Bolshevism has changed its name many times. They even call themselves Republicans. They certainly call themselves Democrats. But the Bolsheviks are call themselves by they call themselves the NRA.
And 2,000 years ago, they called themselves the Sanhedrin, correct?
Okay, yeah, that sounds about that'd probably be true.
And who was the one who stood up against those who invented Bolshevism the most 2,000 years ago?
Well,
That man
oh
from
yeah.
Nazareth?
Well, that would be Christ.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what Joseph Goebbels, or he called him the great Galilean, or what did Adolf Hitler call
Nazarene, the
the
man from Nazareth.
yeah the great Nazarene? That's what Adolf Hitler
Nazarene.
called Christ, the great Nazarene. And he said that he was the first anti-Jew, or the first to
So he
fight.
was a Nazi,
Oh,
written.
okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess for lack of better terms, or how we use the term today, yeah.
Would it be okay if I read this article that Mr. Walt would like to share?
Yeah.
It's short, Phil, and
Oh, good.
took several years to write this, and it is a newsletter I do send out, but I'm never on the internet because I can't turn it on. I send it out by hard mail. The most I've ever sent before to this USA Neighborhood Watching Report, maybe 50 or 70 across the country through the mail.
Okay.
So today's the first time it's ever going to be read, so the whole country could possibly hear it.
Oh,
And
okay.
it's involving the Federal Reserve bankers, the phony United States Corporation versus the real government. So Bruce can read it for you, probably in about 4 minutes.
This is about
Yeah.
how long? I'll be quick and accurate. And
Okay.
we got USA Neighborhood Watchman's Report, emergency alert, all men and women on deck. Well, that's not the Air Force, that's the Navy. Okay. Are you guilty of the bloodshed of President Kennedy? Question mark. The USA, not US corporation, is cursed for rebelling against God's commandments, especially the usury interest laws, Deuteronomy 23:19 and Article 1, Section 8 in the USA Constitution. We are actually sinning by submitting to the unlawful Federal Reserve Act of 1913, a foreign international bank cartel charging usury interest that will temporarily take complete control of planet Earth. This is called Mystery Babylon, the Dark Ages, Illuminati, Communism, United Nations, New World Order, and the World Health Organization. Who has deceived you? Remember? And the World Council of Churches, Churchism, Jumenized Christianism, right? Okay, the six-pointed star hexagram is not King David's, it's David Rothschild's family bank symbol, 1780s, and hidden on the back side of the Federal Reserve $1 bill attached, this star is the number of the beast, 666, Revelation 13, 18. President Kennedy's executive order number 11110 of June 1963 terminated the Federal Reserve Bank and contract and the sorcery six-pointed star $1 bill and replaced it with this red seal, USA, the $2 and $5 bill, similar to what it was before, the Federal Reserve Act and Bank of 1913, with no interest loans, resulting in an economic renaissance not seen for 50 years, a biblical jubilee blessing from Almighty God Yahweh. Sadly, 5 months later, November 1963, President Kennedy was reportedly shot, murdered. The Federal Reserve was unlawfully reenacted once again, removing Kennedy's red seal notes and subjected the USA again to the Federal Reserve usury interest dollar to support the US Usury Corporation, an artificial person, subjected the USA to conduct that Yahweh judges in Deuteronomy 28:15. Because we don't stand against this evil bank, we're unwittingly supporting Kennedy's murder, even heaven forbid. So on behalf of Almighty God Yahweh, we all must openly and publicly demand condemn this destructive bank, the enemy of the USA and kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. See attached artificial person in quotes, AI. The president can at any time enforce executive order number 11110, but must announce it publicly, mainstream news, to prevent a secret retaliation by the Talmudic Jewish bankers, who also can't be proven to be true biblical Israelites, and are really counterfeits called Israelis, Revelations 2:9-9. Jesus also condemned the International Federal Reserve bankers, casting them out of Yahweh's temple, Mark chapter 11, verse 15. The synagogue of Satan is the root of the International Federal Reserve Bank. Any president proclaiming the words, God bless America, end quote, and all allows the Federal Reserve usury bank is an antichrist, a wolf in sheep's clothing, because no president since 1963 will enforce executive order number 11110. It is vital that a citizen applying his Pledge of Allegiance or another USA public servant with constitutional authority loyal to President Kennedy and upheld by Yahweh must officially notify the Federal Reserve, the Board of Governors, to cease and desist operations in the USA with serious consequences meted out by Almighty God Yahweh if this executive order number 11110 is refused. This U.S. corporation, artificial person, will be destroyed by fire, all of Revelations chapter 18. This nightmare is finally going to end, and Jesus, his army, are going to cast out the money changers from his father's temple, USA. Amen. Walter Wojak. So thank you, Walter.
Amen.
So, amen. Phil, yeah. Somebody, all we have to do, anybody with an official oath of office, mm-hmm. still on duty for the rest of their life, or anybody who says a pledge of allegiance to the real flag, like I do in the Jacksonville, Florida Senior Citizen Center. We say it at noon for lunch if I go there. Anybody can go there and direct it to the Board of Governors at the Federal Reserve, including Janet Reno. Yellen.
Janet Reno? That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
It's a mistake. I apologize. It's Janet. Okay.
Right? Hi, Lynn.
All right. What we got?
Hey, Lynn. Good to see you.
Yeah. We tell her she's to cease and desist operations or she's finished. Yahweh's going to finish her. All we have to do is do that, and the fear of God is going to be in them. It hasn't been up to now, unless somebody else has done this already. Warn them with the biblical warning that they're not going to continue with their. And here's why, Phil, because in the Old Testament, Almighty God Yahweh forbids usury, and if we accept that, we're under a curse. We are actually sinning for allowing it to continue in our country, sir.
Okay. Oh, sure. Yeah, I won't disagree with that. We are certainly under a satanic money system. That's for sure.
Yes.
And that's the root of all problems.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that Lynn holding up Mein Kampf there?
Yeah. Linda, are you? Linda, go to the bottom of your screen. There's a microphone. I think your mic is off. Now it's on. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I can't get the headphones to work.
Oh.
I have earplugs in, but they don't seem to be working. So what I'm going to do is. Man, this is
well, good. Good for you to join in. So Walter's here. He's the Robert's neighbor, and he is sharing with us the. So I agree with most of that article, except we might have some slight differences about the JFK assassination. I tend to believe that was staged.
All right, but Phil, can I make a quick comment about that?
Yeah.
Okay. Bruce and I discussed this, but I just want to ask you to ponder this.
Mm-hmm.
When Hitler got rid of the bank, when he became chancellor over in Germany there, the first thing they did the day later was newspaper articles around the world declaring war on Germany, number one. They did that. Uh-huh. And then eventually declared war on him because he got rid of the Federal Reserve Bank over there. So now you come fast forward to 1963. Kennedy did the same thing. He just kept his mouth shut because if he would announce it's the mark of the beast, they would have put him in a mental institution. So he just enacted executive order, 4 ones and a 0. He did it. Now, if they left him alive and he wasn't murdered, he would still have an executive order in place, and there would be no Federal Reserve Bank in our country. We wouldn't be under curse. So, but we are under curse. That Federal Reserve Bank is is running right now. So that's why he can't be alive, or he would stop it today, Kennedy, just like he did in 63. He would just today the same way he did in 63.
I would like to hear Lynn's take on this.
No, I don't think Kennedy did a damn thing about the Federal Reserve. And I think if he had, he would have told us. And I think the whole alleged assassination was a fake job. I think the Kennedy family is in on it. That's why they never said a word about how stupid the official narrative was. Jack Ruby coming in there and supposedly shooting Oswald live on television for all of us to watch. That's a movie made for TV news. That's what that is. You'd never, if they had wanted to kill Kennedy, let me tell you something. Jack Kennedy's doctor said he wouldn't make it through a second term. When he went to the summit, the Geneva summit with Khrushchev, he was so sick he could barely walk. He had his, there were so many health issues with Kennedy that it was logical that he would have wanted to retire and get the hell out. But there were scandals brewing all over the place. All the women he was sleeping around with, he passed on a sexually transmitted disease to Jackie. Just so many things. So, no, I don't think Kennedy was any great hero. Was he making a move on the Fed? I tend to doubt it. Because if he, you know, this is all of these, all this was secret. He had a secret plan to get us out of Vietnam. Richard Nixon had a secret plan to end the Vietnam War, and he ended up extending it into Laos and Cambodia. So now I don't trust any of these guys. And I, in particular, I don't trust a Kennedy because they lie. They lie like crazy.
Phil, Phil, hey, Phil, Phil.
You just want to abolish the Federal Reserve? Just shut it down. Just shut it down. Oh, we got to do this. We got to do that. We got to do this. We got to do that. No. Yeah. Donald Trump could come at that. This is, Trump is great for this stuff. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to build a wall. Well, they had 2 years.
Yeah.
2 years, the Republicans had a majority in both the House and the Senate. Trump could have passed the legislation. The money would have been there. The budget would have been there. The wall would be up. But, of course, the wall isn't going to stop this anyway. It's purely symbolic. Most of them are being flown in by plane.
Yeah.
The stuff that's happening down at the border, that's the movie made for TV news that we're supposed to be focused on. But no, I don't think Trump is, he reads from the script, and that's what Kennedy did. He read from the script. Otherwise, he would have pulled us out of Vietnam from the beginning.
They give and, us you know,
a Pastor, there's so much more I could say about Jack Kennedy because I lived through all that. Well, I remember
we could do a whole 2 hours on Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, I remember the Bay of Pigs. And I remember his brother allegedly going after Jimmy Hoffa. That was another thing, too. How hypocritical. Here, they got elected with the support of gangsters. They got elected because the Chicago mob took care of the West Virginia primary and eliminated Hubert Humphrey, who was supposed to win that primary. He lost. And then Daley in Cook County basically rigged the 1960 election. And Richard Nixon knew it. He knew it. But he decided he wasn't going to challenge it the way, say, Trump challenged the 2020 election. Nixon made it a political decision. He was probably advised not to challenge the result, even though it was so close. It was clearly rigged from Chicago. So I don't know. People really want to try to believe in the myth of Jack Kennedy and the Kennedys. And Phil is explaining this. They're a long time family that's into this stuff forever.
Phil. Phil, can I say something, please?
Yeah, jump in there, right. Walter.
This nice lady did not hear this report, but let me just explain the facts. President Kennedy issued Executive Order 401 and a 0 in June of 63. He issued a $2 and $5 red seal note. He distributed billions of dollars in our country. We had a renaissance, and he was taking out the Federal Reserve money. He already did that, and then it went all the way through to November when that incident happened, and then the Federal Reserve took out all the $2 and $5 non-Federal Reserve interest-free money. They collected it back up. So that did happen. Kennedy did do something to get rid of the Federal Reserves. So this lady doesn't understand. She ought to listen to this article we just read earlier.
Oh, who's this? Is this Marcus putting this up?
Look at that.
Well, look at the top there. You'll see it says
Federal. I, I remember when the silver certificates became Federal Reserve notes. I remember that.
They're not Federal Reserve notes.
Sure, I remember all that. But the thing is, if Kennedy, if that executive order had been serious, it wouldn't have just been $1 and $5 notes. It would have been $100 notes.
Well, he tried to do more.
And $50 notes, right?
He tried to do more, but that ended it in November. It ended.
Right. Well, that was a decision. Well,
here's the problem. Here's the problem. It was issued by Kennedy, and there was no interest for at least 6 months, ma'am. None. And in our country, we had a renaissance. Kennedy did that. And then after he supposedly he's dead, why did they reinstitute the Federal Reserve that $1 bill and took away the $2 and $5 off the market, the public place? That shows you that if Kennedy was alive, he would still be pushing that that executive order against the Fed. There would be no Federal Reserve in our country. They had to get rid of him like they did Hitler. The same thing. Can you see the facts, ma'am? Look at the facts.
By myself, I don't believe in show business, and I believe most of it was show business. And that they put our heroes in place, and we swallow it hook, line, and sinker. And that's the real issue I think Lynn's addressing here. They put these people up for it.
What's that?
They put these so-called heroes.
False hopes.
Well, that's... So in 10 minutes, I'm going to send you guys a new invite, okay? Do you see this thing on the screen? Okay, but anyways, if you look at the top, you'll see that we're down to 9 minutes. So at the end of 9 minutes, I'll send you a new invite.
Yeah, Phil, I have to leave before two because I participate in an open chat room at No Agenda Pop. Yes, and there's like
well,
a thousand.
Well, you can cram in 10 minutes what most of us can cram in an hour. So feel free to just leave whenever come and go as you please, Lynn.
Also, Phil.
Don't get me wrong. I would love for years and years. I did believe that, Kennedy, he was going to get us out of Vietnam. I remember, all that.
Phil. All right. Phil.
Yeah.
You can do it today. Tell the lady what we just read. Anybody with an oath of office or a pledge of office can read that law is still in the books. We can tell Janet Yellen to get out. We have the authority. Tell her that. We can do it today. That lady right there can do it.
Oh, Janet Yellen? She belongs to the tribe. And she's the one who's going to tell us to get out.
No, she can't.
She's the one in charge.
No, she can't do that because if you just remind her of that executive order that's still law, we're going to tell her to cease and desist or you're going to be in serious trouble with Almighty God Yahweh. They're going to have the fear of God in them. So tell this lady if she wants it reissued, it's in the books, 4-1-0, it's still there, it's law. Anybody with the authority can threaten Janet Yellen with it. So tell
the very existence of an executive order, a persistent executive order, under any other circumstances than a national emergency is unconstitutional, period. If Kennedy had wanted to take down the Fed, he could have done it legislatively. The Democrats had majorities in both houses. He could have done it. He could have done it legitimately. But executive order, that's what Trump did with a goddamn wall. After 2 years, right, in 2018, lo and behold, the Republicans lost the Senate, right? They lost either the Senate or the House. They lost control of one of the houses. Then Donald Trump says, I've got to issue an emergency executive order in order to control the border. You had 2 years to pass a law, you bastard. That is a lie. I don't want to hear any more about these executive orders because, like I say, they're completely unconstitutional, most of them.
Phil.
An executive order issued under any other circumstances than a national emergency as a temporary measure is a gross violation of the Constitution. Only the legislature, which is to say the Senate and the House, has the ability to do anything about the Federal Reserve. The president can't do that unilaterally. That's ridiculous. I don't know exactly what Kennedy did or who he was pandering to or who he was playing up to. But it's a ruse, and it's the same damn thing we got with Trump and the wall. People are going to say, Trump was going to build the wall. Well, he had 2 years to do it, and he didn't. Look, the money could have been appropriated. The issue wouldn't exist anymore. But, of course, we know they're bringing immigrants. They're not even – most of the immigrants are not coming in across the border. That's a diversion. That's to get us hyped about the border. When, to tell you the truth, they're flying them in by plane. And where do you think most of those planes are landing? They're landing in Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida's territory. That's where those planes are landing, bringing in the immigrants. The immigration issue is really critical because it's all about population displacement. That's the important thing, that they're moving in. It's population displacement and replacement. Now, whether that has a racial basis, you know, that's a whole separate argument. I say they bring in immigrants and they don't care where they're from, because immigrants are easy to bully. They're easy to push around. You register them and they'll vote for you. So that's the overall strategy. And, you know,
well, John F. Kennedy wrote that book, Nation of Immigrants. And in that book, he said that America has too many European immigrants. We need to bring in immigrants from the Latin America. And so everything I needed to know about JFK is in that book, Nation of Immigrants. And so that's what John F. Kennedy was all about. He was about replacing it. That's when the Cuban Missile Crisis happened. And that's when the wet foot, dry foot law came into being, is under JFK. And, you know, the wet foot, dry foot is still on the books. People call these invaders illegal immigrants. They're not illegal. In fact, they are following the law precisely. As long as they get here and they claim asylum, they're welcome here. And that law has never been repealed. And so that's what Fox News does. They call these people illegal immigrants. It's like that whole term doesn't mean anything, because none of you have taken any of these laws off the books. They're still on there.
I think the key point Lynn pointed out was the ruse of these so-called executive orders, right?
Mm-hmm.
They know they're doing the wrong thing, and they're doing, they know exactly what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
setting us up with a ruse.
All right, Phil, one thing.
Walter.
That executive order, there's been no president since Kennedy that will dare enforce it, still a law. So if no president will do it, they're afraid to do it, for whatever you're saying, anybody with constitutional authority has a duty, a responsibility to enforce it and to tell Janet Yellen, you're out of here. So I'm doing it right now. I'm telling your show. I am telling Janet Yellen, here's what I'm going to tell her right now. I'm going to read it for that lady.
Hey, I'll back you up.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'll stand behind you.
Let's send people out into the streets to do it. I'm for that.
I'll tell Janet Yellen to kick rocks.
Yeah, I'll tell
Janet
you
Yellen,
what.
Kick rocks.
Let me do it right now. I'll read again what I already.
I'm willing to recruit a mob of leftists to do it. How about that? I'm willing to recruit a mob of communists to take down the Federal Reserve. I'll bet you could get them to do it. I'll bet you with enough money, you could get the left out there marching against the Federal Reserve. I saw that during that whole Occupy Wall Street business.
Phil,
they don't care. You could get anybody to. But the thing is this. If there were anybody of principle who were really committed to this, they would put out, like Thomas Massie and Ron Paul, they tabled legislation to do it. You keep talking about an executive order that's sitting there. We have legislation that has already been crafted. And we have House resolutions submitted by Congressman Thomas Massie of Kentucky, probably the only honest one in that whole House, audit and shut down the Federal Reserve. That has never been done. And anything short of legislation to take down the Fed is nothing but it's fake. It's phony.
Phil, can I read this? Can I read it, Phil?
Let's tell Janet Yellen to kick rocks.
You tell that lady, please let me finish reading this at the bottom. There it is right here. It is vital that a citizen applying his Pledge of Allegiance or another USA public service with constitutional authority, loyal to President Kennedy and upheld by Yahweh, must officially notify the Federal Reserve and the Board of Governors and Janet Yellen to cease and desist operations in the USA with serious consequences.
Wait a minute. Where did Yahweh come from in this? Why are you dragging God into it? God's got nothing to do with it.
Can I finish, Phil, please?
Yes.
Yahweh. Yahweh.
Now I have to find out, because this lady interrupted. I get my place again. If this executive order 111, wait a minute, here it is. Serious consequences, that's what Yahweh is going to mete out by him if the executive order 1111 is refused. So, and then here's the rest of it. The U.S. corporation artificial person will be destroyed by fire, Revelation 18. This nightmare is finally going to end. And here it is, ma'am. Jesus, too, and his army is going to cast out the money changers from his father's temple, the USA. Now, you want to know about Yahweh? He's your boss or the devil's your boss? Which one is it? Can you tell me, lady, who's your boss?
Nobody's my boss, and nobody tells me how to think. Not some Bible thumper, not some Bible thumper, and not some flag waver, you understand? Because I'm 73 years old. I've been watching you people roll over for Vietnam. You rolled over for 9/11, so I don't want to hear it anymore. Oh, Jesus is on our side. Muhammad's on our side. Screw that. I don't want to hear that.
All
right. I don't want to hear it anymore. Right away, as soon as I hear it, it's like, oh, you got a whole nother agenda.
I'll be sending you another invite right now. If you get return, if you want. All right. On that note, we'll take a pause. All right.
Okay. All right.
Cord. All right. So, Robert the Bruce, can you hear me?
We're back. Yes.
So, what Walter just read, does that mean that Janet Yellen needs to vacate her position as of right now?
Because Yahweh and Jesus says so.
Yeah. Can you get a higher authority than that?
Yeah. They're really going to listen to that.
Well, I'm all for Janet Yellen vacating her office.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I think it would do any good. She would just be replaced by somebody else. But
I'm deeply ambivalent about this whole thing, because the problem here is a lot of these Christians and Bible-believing people, they got the guns. They're well-armed. And a lot of them are preppers. So we want them on our side. Mm-hmm. So more often than not, I hold back and I don't say anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Those of you that have studied, if you studied the National Socialists.
Well, just think of how Adolf had to deal with all that.
Yeah, this is exactly the problem that Hitler talks about. He has a whole chapter on it. What are we going to do about these people, these gullible Christians? You know, we need them, but they're tied, you know, they were tied to the Catholic Church and they were tied to the Lutheran Church. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what the NSDAP was proposing was clearly going to go against the establishment. So it was a very delicate, and they ended up forming a coalition with the Catholic Center Party. Of course, Hitler was baptized as a Catholic, so he was technically a Catholic. The Pope at the time was very sympathetic, in the beginning was very sympathetic. Of course, as the Third Reich turned towards certain policies like euthanasia, and bringing National Socialist ideology into the churches, the church tended to turn against them over time. But that's a whole other discussion. But for us strategically, I'm deeply ambivalent. I felt like letting him go on and on and on about his belief, you know, that somehow or other we're going to be able to use the Bible to shut down the Fed. Well, sure, throw that in the mix too. I don't care. You know, I got nothing against it. But that's a false hope. It really is. It's a false hope. And this is what these people did after 9/11. Boy, they thumped that Bible after 9/11. And look at October 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, they've been thumping that Bible to support the Israelis. I mean, that's all you hear. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to, you know, how do you talk to these people? They can make that Bible say anything they want. They can make, right, whether it's the Scofield Bible, or whether it's the original Coverdale or Tyndale English Tyndale or Wycliffe, or, you know, any English translation. Most of these Bible thumpers, they never even read an original Bible in Greek or Hebrew. They read the English, a lot of them, and some of them, you know, but you can interpret the Bible any way you want. Now, it is true that one of the central points of the NSDAP program, and I think it's got them a lot of votes from the left, was breaking the shackles of interest. So I don't know, Bruce, you want to explain what breaking the shackles of interest means? It's about usury.
It's about nine.
Mm-hmm.
And don't capitulate. And Rothschild was arrested. And to the very end, he didn't capitulate. He didn't bow down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, breaking the shackles of interest is a perfectly legitimate. Mm-hmm. It should be this, and that's mean shutting down the Fed, because how does this Fed make money? They charge interest on every piece of paper they print. So there it is. That's usury. Of course, usury, some people interpret it as excessive interest. They say it would destroy the capitalist system if we banned usury. So, you know, as it is now, we kind of regulate interest. That's what the Fed does. It regulates interest rates. It sets the Fed and LIBOR and all these corrupt corporate institutions. They manage and regulate the usury. See, and the other thing that I'm willing to borrow from the Bible is the Jubilee. According to the Bible, the ancient Israelites, by God's command, every 7 years wiped out all debt. That seems like that's a great way. I think Thomas Jefferson would have liked that. Of course, he had this idea that you should cancel inheritance from one generation to another because he saw the accumulation of wealth and the creation of an aristocracy through the inheritance of land. That's what had happened in Europe. So he had some very radical ideas about busting up wealth. But yeah, I think if we're talking about a practical economic program for us, sure, breaking the shackles of interest, ending usury, outlawing usury. Now, I don't know. Does that mean we get rid of credit cards? See, this is stuff. It's like the business about vaccines. Well, we know how they got the vaccine going. They got it going through our pets, right? And our domestic herds of cattle and sheep. You see, they started with the animals, and they convinced us that vaccination works against hoof and mouth disease and, protect rabies. I just read a fantastic piece on how there is no difference between rabies and distemper, and we've been hoaxed on that. We've been faked on that. Someone has a video of a allegedly rabid raccoon, and there's a whole discussion about what they're calling rabies or distemper. And does this shot, that was one of the first vaccines they came up with. And actually rabies was, I think, one of the first instances where they spread this idea of an infectious disease and getting vaccinated against it. So, but I say to people, well, yeah, we can point out all of the problems and the statistical indications that these vaccines are either ineffective or poisonous. But are people going to continue to vaccinate their dogs and cats and cattle? See, you know what I mean? No one wants to confront that, because if the vaccine is bad for us, well, then what the hell are we doing to our beloved pets and our animals? So, and it's the same thing with the idea of usury. What we should be debating in our movement is, yes, breaking the shackles of interest, but how are we going to do it and still have a stable economy? How are we going to do it and still have credit cards? Actually, the government could issue a no interest credit card, couldn't it? That's what an American breaking the shackles of interest would do. The government would say, here's a credit card, right? Of course, how would you collect, they tax you. They tax you instead of charging interest on those credit cards. There's any number of ways you could do it. But this idea of usury, we have to confront it. We have to confront it, because what Walter was talking about was shutting down the Fed. Well, so let me get this straight. You want to shut down the Fed and you want to issue real money backed by gold or silver. Because remember, the country had huge argument. They didn't want to monetize silver for the longest time. There's a lot of violence over that. That's what fed into the populist movement at the turn of the century, was people said, come on, let's monetize silver, because they were mining all kinds of silver in Nevada, Colorado. And finally, they monetize silver, and that's what we get. But chasing the money changers out of the temple, beating them out of the temple, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that. But you're not going to do it just by shutting down the Fed. Now you've got to address the question of all the institutions that charge usury and get rich and powerful on it.
That's the biggest deception in the history of mankind. I say that all of us need to go out to our front yards and burn all of our cash and put the banks out of business overnight. But of course, that's going to require some kind of a mass awakening throughout all humanity so that all humanity realizes that the money is the problem, and to go out and burn all your cash. And we wouldn't need any weapons. We would make the banks go out of business overnight. And it would be a peaceful revolution. But in order for that to happen, we need to have some sort of a supernatural mass awakening.
Bill, can I say something?
Yeah. Was it Walter? Yeah, get in there, Walter.
All right. Please let me finish. No, before.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
It's about God and Yahweh and the bankers. What they don't want you to know, the Jewish bankers, is they know the Old Testament law perfectly about usury. And it's wrong to charge God's children usury, interest.
Mm-hmm.
But if nope, but here's the thing. Once they're violating God's laws of the Old Testament, if someone knows they're doing it and reminds them, see, the Jews don't want you to know, they're making believe, they don't want you to know that they're breaking the law. So if you remind them, if you continue to do it with God's children, he's going to destroy you, Janet Yellen. When you do that, remind these Jew bankers of God's law, Yahweh's law, the fear of God's going to get in them because no one's doing it. No one's
Walter, you don't get it. The Talmudic Jews don't interpret the law that way. Just like the ninth commandment says, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. They interpret thy neighbor to mean fellow Jews. And the same thing goes with the commandment not to charge usury interest. They interpret that against, you know, because as you said, against the children of Israel. Well, they interpret that as only applying to themselves, but they can charge interest to the non-Jews, which is to say the Goyim, the nations. Goyim literally means nations.
Not me. Not me, Lynn. And that's what right race Israel.
What I'm saying, though, is you can't, if you're going to use the Old Testament law, remember, they have their own interpretation of it. And that's what they're going to argue.
That's what you're saying. I am telling you today that they know exactly about their violating God's law. They don't want you to know that. And if someone reminds them on a show like this, Janet Yellen and you governors in there that you don't know their names, you continue breaking that law of usury, Yahweh's going to destroy you. Once you say that, I am telling you, they're going to be scared to death.
That isn't going to mean a thing to the people that are not highly motivated by Yahweh. You know what I'm saying? That isn't going to mean a thing to them.
What you're
going to sound like is another religious Bible thumper.
No, the religious Bible thumpers don't use the word of God and threaten somebody with it. By name.
These books are written by men.
You're threatening Janet Yellen and those board of governors. If you continue sinning against Yahweh, he's going to destroy you. Who does that on your shows? Says the name, and Yahweh's going to destroy you, Janet, if you keep on charging interest on loans to the Israelites in America. You can't do it. There it is. There it is right there. Did they cut that off?
Yeah, we'll see if she... Janet Yellen has been put on notice, and let's see if she...
I'm real afraid of that.
Vacate her office immediately.
Yeah, and she's real afraid that people are going to use Yahweh's law against her or Jesus's preaching against her. You think she really cares? Do you think any of them care about that? This is where I got to agree with Mao Zedong. Political power doesn't grow out of a Bible. It grows out of the barrel of a gun. And I hate to remind you all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Political power is force. It is violence. Now, it's disciplined and organized violence, but Mao was right. Political power grows out of the barrel of a gun, not a Bible, I hate to tell you. Unfortunately, as I say, Phil,
okay.
Most of the time I restrain myself when I try not to talk this way because Christians are so, so sensitive about their religion.
Yeah, and...
They can't take us anywhere.
Yeah.
And the whole of life is what we need to look at. You know, people do, there are.
How about nature? How about nature? There's no usury in nature.
Right.
Nobody, see, that's one good criteria to use.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a paradigm for it? Is there an archetype for this in nature? Right.
And also that, you know, a lot of people think the agenda is, well, you're, you know, the only treasure we have, according to Uncle Addie, was your own folk, your people. And
that's a value. That's a question of values for people who only value money.
Right. Just,
you know,
reacting.
They sell their mothers for a nickel. You know that.
And just reacting to the usury thing with replacing agenda.
There's been a live reaction from Janet Yellen.
I mean, look, I'm on the same page as Walter. I would love to hang these people. I really would. I'd love to subject them to real biblical law. You know, the ninth commandment, bearing false witness.
Right.
The children of Israel would stone you to death for that, for testifying falsely. false flag operations, that hoaxes that blame innocent people and claim they committed these crimes, that's a violation of the Ninth Commandment. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And we could execute people for that. I'm on board with that. I'm down with that. But the thing is, people don't, you know, we could preach Bible and Ten Commandments all day long. And yeah, we should bring that to table. The table is part of our arsenal. But as soon as you start talking Yahweh, people right away are going to think you belong to some kind of holy roller sect. That's what they're going to think, because most people don't say Yahweh. They say Jehovah, or they say God. You know, I know you think you've got the right pronunciation of the Tetragrammaton, which is four letters without any vowels. They deliberately coded it that way to make it impossible to understand. But that just isn't, I don't see that as a winning strategy for us. I think we can make the case against usury based on simple ethics and morality and the fact that it defies, it's parasitic. Mm-hmm. Parasites do exist in nature. And usury is an example of a naturally occurring parasite under capitalism. What are the naturally occurring parasites under socialism? That's a whole separate discussion. Then we can get into national socialism versus international socialism, which is a whole nother debate. But under capitalism, you know, usury, parasitic usury has existed. And the thing is, it wasn't just the Jews that ran on this, because remember, usury, the charging of interest, was illegal in Christian Europe because it was prohibited by the Church of Rome. They knew that it was against God's law. Consequently, the only people who could really charge usury in the beginning were the Jews, Jewish merchants, and maybe whatever Muslims, you know, were there. But what happened over time was, in the Italian city-states, all kinds of Catholics suddenly got into usury, like the Medici and the Orsini, the great families of Italy, the banking families of Italy. And then, of course, you had the Hanseatic. So, you know, the Jews weren't the only ones that got into usury. In the beginning, they were the only ones that sort of could legally do it. And then, you know, barons and kings became indebted to them and so forth. But after a while, as I say, others picked up this idea of usury. And then it became the whole basis, we're told, for the development of capitalism, which I don't believe. I think it was always a parasitic growth on the evolution of capitalism. I think that the Industrial Revolution and things like that were because of human ingenuity, not because of the charging of interest. Now, as far as the extension of credit, remember that in the beginning, charters were granted. Here's another thing, too, the corporation was never meant to last forever. Corporations were temporary arrangements where the king would issue a charter for the building of a road, the building of a bridge, the building of a dam. And when it was done, the corporation dissolved. This idea of these corporations that last as long as they want and can do whatever they want and have limited liability, that's a total perversion of the idea of corporate charter. So the other thing that we would have to do to really reform the society that we're visualizing, in addition to abolishing, breaking the shackles of interest, which is to say abolishing usury, while still creating some kind of credit system, reasonable, just credit system. There are other things that we're going to have to do that are even more basic than that.
Hey, Phil, can I say one more thing, please?
Yeah, Walter, jump in.
All right. All this Jewish business, these bankers charging interest on loans, what needs to come out is they're not the real Israelites. They're charging the Israelites. That's what's got to come out. Mm-hmm. It's all false Israelites. They're Edomites. Even our own Jewish encyclopedia says.
Because you think you're the real Israel. Is that it?
You can tell. The biblical.
No. The British are the real Israelites. They claim Israelites.
Phil, here's how you can tell who an Israelite is.
Anglos only.
Hold on. You can tell who a real Israelite is today. Look at 1 Samuel 17:42 when Goliath fought David. Mm-hmm. Goliath hated David because he blushed red in the face. And what does the word Hebrew blush red? So you got to blush red, then you're an Israelite.
What if you have a suntan?
Then you get rid of it. You'll find out. You'll find out if you blush red.
Yeah, okay, I'm gonna tell you the ugly fact.
Well, there's another part. I have to finish.
The people who live in Palestine now, the Palestinian Arabs. They're probably closer to what the ancient Israelites looked and sounded like than
Than the
anybody else.
bankers. Than the bankers, that's right. But
Well, they're
here's the
European. They're all European.
other two qualifications to be an Israelite today. You blush red, you must believe in the commandments of God in the Old Testament, and you believe in the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. You have these three things, you are an Israelite, whether you got a suntan or not, young lady. That's the requirements.
I saw Hitler blush when that lady at the 1936 Olympics, when that lady reached over and kissed him in the stands. And even in black and white footage, you could tell that Hitler was blushing when that happened.
So the real Israelites.
And she was from Norco, California. She was just right around the corner from me. I guess she had traveled to Berlin for those Olympics, and she decided to give Hitler a great big smooch. And you could tell that he was embarrassed and that he was blushing.
Yeah, more important than that, more important observation to make about Hitler is this. His willingness to go out there in the middle of crowds, which you'd never see a president do in the United, well, in the beginning, presidents did that in the United States. But one of the things I've always observed about Hitler is apparently he wasn't the least bit afraid of being assassinated and was willing to go out and mix with and at any given moment when he was mixing with ordinary people, he could have been. I always notice the security that leaders maintain for themselves. So Hitler and the NSDAP were very, whatever you think about them, whether you like them or hate them or what, agree with this or disagree with that, it's clear they had massive, massive popular support in both Germany and Austria just by the fact that Hitler could walk out into a crowd. And it's true, women were in love. I mean, yeah, it's true. He was incredibly popular, charismatic. You know, there's no doubt about that. And you're right that a woman would just run right up to him and kiss him. It shows that at that point, they had no concern about anybody trying to assassinate him from among the German people.
Yeah, and he would stand up in his convertible limousine. And I think that's what the whole JFK narrative was about. It was to show the contrast between Adolf Hitler, who would stand up in his open car, whereas JFK can't even go down the street without getting his head blown off. You know, so there's a big contrast there. And I think that's what they were playing upon with the JFK assassination. And we have these home movies from I think Germany came the closest to coming to the best form of money system. That's why they advanced so quickly during the 30s. They were building autobahns. They were their industry just took off really. Everybody was getting a house. They were having a baby boom over there, and they were having three or four children per couple. And you see, and they couldn't allow that to happen. They couldn't allow Germany to continue having this baby boom and to. And so they came the closest. And so, and to talk about the perfect money system, it's really hard. And, but I'm thinking that Germany probably came the closest. And I would say, yeah, we would like to bring the Third Reich back. But, you know, they obviously some mistakes were made. And so we need to learn from the mistakes. And, we're way too divided now. They have made sure that we are splintered into 1,000 different directions and that we will never be able to unite. The whole thing that we saw in Germany last century will never happen again. They've made it to where it's impossible. They've got us. There's no way we could ever have another Third Reich. And so again, we're dealing with a supernatural problem that only something, a second coming of something can solve.
I don't know if there's such a thing as supernatural. Where the rubber hits the road, where one's grounded, that woman from L.A. that gave Adolf a smooch, she didn't get a nose job, and she didn't go down to the department store and buy some Maybelline and made her cheeks red, even if she yelled she's an Israelite. Mm-hmm. Especially if she did that, I'm sure Adolf would have been a little bit more. The security.
I'm a much bigger fan of Mussolini than I am of Hitler.
But
he made his share of mistakes as well.
Well,
he was the one who did it first. He did it 10 years before, right? The March on Rome, 1920-21. And by 1933, Mussolini had really improved Italy, full employment economy, trains that ran on time. People were shocked. They were stunned because it was, and he abolished the mafia in Sicily. Can you imagine that? This was the first time in history and then Mussolini proceeded to invade Ethiopia, which they called Abyssinia, and Libya. in 1935. And I think that's where he started to kind of go astray. And then, of course, at a certain point, he got, you know, you look at the fact that the Franco government survived in Spain and Salazar in Portugal, even though they were fascist governments. I'm not insulting them by calling them that. I mean, super conservative, certainly the Falanges in Spain are classically a fascist organization, modeled on the Italian fascist model. They stayed out of World War II. And gosh, I mean, Franco stayed in power until he died like in the late 70s. So my feeling is that with respect to fascism and national socialism, I think they made a mistake by going to war. Now, you say they were forced into it, and that's a whole discussion. And then there's also the question of the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact and the alliance between the Soviet Union and the Third Reich that divided up Poland and gave the British, obviously, one could say, either the pretext or the motivation to declare war, Britain and France. You know, the whole, you know, there are a lot of things that I could criticize the Third Reich for, but I feel like they were really imitating what Mussolini had already achieved. Mussolini, who made the cover of Time magazine like three times. And I remember one of my teachers, Mr. Simonette, in the, I guess this would have been the 10th grade. 10th grade, maybe. He was in World War II, and he said that when he was a youth, during the Depression, everybody in America loved Mussolini, and Italians were super proud of Mussolini. What he had accomplished in Italy to get it back on its feet and restore order was so widely admired that FDR's National Recovery Act was largely cribbed from Mussolini's economic recovery program in Italy. That's right. The Democrats who came in with FDR in 1932 almost borrowed paragraph by paragraph from Benito Mussolini's reconstruction program for Italy from over 10 years earlier. And well, from 10 years earlier. And this is why, and you can read that initial Time magazine cover that has Mussolini on there, how they're praising him to the skies and everything else. So people recognize the success of economic recovery in fascist Italy and obviously in Germany at the 1936 Olympics and so forth. But remember that, like I say, it's pretty clear that the National Socialists were very much inspired by Benito Mussolini, Gabriel D'Annunzio, well, Julius Evola, who's fashionable for people to pick on. They hate him because I think he was a pervert. Giovanni Gentile, others, you know, the intellectuals who are the founders of Italian fascism, a very modern ideology. And I feel like, you know, I have like three translations of Mein Kampf. I think anybody here who is going to delve into the subject really has to read a decent English translation of Mein Kampf and also has to study, because that's Hitler dictating, or perhaps he and whoever he collaborated with on it, because he wasn't the greatest writer. In the chapter where he discusses Italy as an inspiration for what they're planning to do. So, and there's a whole history to this that goes back to before the Third Reich that people need to be aware of. And I should say, in connection with that, the other thing that Mussolini was widely praised for was his concordat with the Pope. No one expected this, but he finally solved that problem that had divided Italy for generations and got the Pope and the papacy in Rome to go along with it. And he was widely praised for this as well. He then became kind of like a peacemaker in Europe and resolved an initial conflict between the Third Reich and Austria, the Dollfuss government in Austria. So Mussolini, it's really sad to see what happened to him over time and what happened to Italian fascism over time, because I kind of admire them for their achievements. So anyway.
Uncle Addie was had so much faith in Benito. He sent a squad to rescue him from that castle.
Yeah, that's right. At the end, they rescued him. And the Germans had to come into Italy and recover. You know, and that's the problem. And militarily, the Italians were just, they should have stayed out of that. You know, they were not a war fighting people at that point. They weren't up for that. That's not to say that many of them didn't serve bravely on the Eastern Front. A lot of Italians died on the Eastern Front because of the alliance. But, you know, the Axis powers never really coordinated globally with the Japanese the same way that Britain, the Soviet Union, and the United States did. I mean, they coordinated everything. This was another weakness of the Axis powers, that they didn't really conduct a global, you know, Phil says, well, it was not a global struggle. That's the whole thing. And if they had been able to synchronize and coordinate their campaigns globally, especially the Japanese were having amazing success in Asia. They just rolled right over the British Empire. They took over Malaysia, you know, and they took over Phil, when you talk about Pearl Harbor being a movie.
Yeah.
Well, they did invade the Philippines and take over the Philippines, and there was a bit of fighting there, and they took thousands of Americans prisoner. Now, the so-called Bataan Death March, I've talked to many Japanese about that, and they laugh at that because they say the problem was that the American troops were in such lousy shape, whereas the average Japanese soldier, he could march, you know, for hours and hours and hours and live on K rations.
Yeah.
They found that the American soldiers were not up to it. And that's what the so-called Bataan Death March was about. That the American soldiers were in such terrible physical condition, they couldn't keep up with the Japanese on that march.
Japanese had to keep the Philippines from going communist. And to say that they took over the Philippines, or did they take over the Philippines, or did they kick out the communist elements?
There was no communist element in the Philippines at that time. There was an independence movement, but it was very weak. The Philippines were a United States colony, and General Douglas MacArthur expected to be their first president. And he was the man in charge on the scene in the Philippines, right? He expected to be, at that point, he was sort of chief. He was commander in chief of all the forces in the Philippines, which, as I say, was an American territory. It wasn't even independence. They were planning on making the Philippines independent. And there had been an independence movement under Aguinaldo that went all the way back to the turn of the century. But no, I hate to tell you this, but your whole thing is that the Japanese were conquering Asia in order to stop the communists. I'm not necessarily buying that, because in China, the dominant regime was under Sun Yat-sen and then under Chiang Kai-shek. Now they were allied with Stalin because they were getting support from Stalin. But Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang, were they communists? See, you know, it's not as clear cut as that. Stalin wouldn't even support the Chinese communists in the beginning because they were incompetent. They got massacred. That's how they ended up there in Yunnan, up in the mountains, for like 10 years, building their forces and everything else. So I reject the idea that the Japanese conquest of Asia was motivated. They could say, it's true, they did form something called the Anti-Comintern Alliance, or that's what the Axis was. That is to say, when the Japanese, the Italians, and Germany, the Third Reich, formed that alliance, they said it was to stop international Bolshevism. That's certainly true. Mm-hmm. That was their rationale. But I don't know. I don't accept that for the Philippines. I mean, they conquered the Philippines. They conquered Malaysia and took it away from the British. So now, are you saying, well, they did it in order to preempt the communist revolution there? Well, that's a little bit, you know, I'm not sure about that. But
All I know is that the Chai Coms are celebrating their 100-year anniversary, and they're so proud. And they
but
and
are they really communist? Square,
and they got are all they the really flags are they going?
Are Chinese communist billionaires really communist? See, they can call themselves anything they want.
Yeah,
that's the whole thing.
They're celebrating their communists. They're celebrating their communism.
Well, yeah, of course, because that's the. But they're not communist anymore.
Yeah, I know they changed. They changed their identity. I know.
Right. So I, you know, to me, they're just a collectivist authoritarian. Really, that communism is a great word. Communist is a great word to throw around. You know, like red.
Right.
I mean, you know. It's words. It's a label. You know, Hitler has a lot to say about this because it's funny. He opened up membership in the NSDAP to communists, to former communists. In fact, they were a primary target of recruitment according to Hitler, because he said they were already kind of committed to socialism. All he had to do was move them from international socialism, which he regarded as a Jewish plot, to national socialism. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they had been communists, he didn't have any problem with that at all. And you can read what he has to say about that also. So, and in the end, he said that he didn't even require people to join the party, really, because he felt that the whole country had become national socialist. And at that point, he really didn't see any need for an exclusive party, but it continued to exist just because of the legacy of politics in the Third Reich. It had some, you know, I think his ideas on that changed over time, but who can say, you know, with a stroke of a pen, Hitler could declare that you weren't really a Jew. He did that with Reinhard Heydrich. Heydrich had like a Jewish grandfather, and Hitler said, well, you know, so I mean, they were certainly willing to declare people not Jews. Actually, there was one of the top generals in the Wehrmacht, most successful, Mischler, whatever his name was. Yeah, he was of Jewish, but they declared what they'll do. They created a new papers to make you Aryan if they wanted to. They could do that. That happened. I know no one likes to admit it, but it's pretty well documented. So I don't know. And I also, you know, the idea that you're going to classify people according to, I think they said you were a Jew if what? You had a great-grandparent? Well, what if you had a great-great-grandparent?
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, the Nuremberg law, there's no justification for the Nuremberg laws on racial hygiene. But hey, some of you guys may believe in racial hygiene. I don't know.
Hey, Lynn, is that like Good Friday? You know, you're born a cow and now you're a fish, so you can eat the fish.
So, yeah.
The whole complexity of labels, like when someone calls himself a Jew or an Arab or this, that, or the other, they're going to fight. And Adolf addressed that issue about, you know, the whole complexity of World War I, World War II, our whole history, the whole history of us from who are born out of European descent. You know, the complexity of the enemy of these hyenas is so, as soon as someone gets stuck on a label or a word.
A lot of it's the interpretation of history. My feeling is that we shouldn't, we need to study history, but what's the current situation? The current situation is implementation of the Kalergi plan in Europe.
Right.
And its corresponding plan here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So there's a name for that, actually, that it's like Azteca or something. It's this notion of Mexico reconquering, the Reconquista.
Yeah.
You know, that the Mexicans are going to take over California, Texas.
Yeah, they already have.
You know, and so this is by design. This is by design. And as I say, I don't think they care whether those immigrants are Arab, Middle Eastern, North African, Black Africans, Ukrainians. I don't think they care where the immigrants come from, as long as they're foreigners who can be manipulated and used. Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing. And this also has a lot to do with the circumstances that in between World War I and World War II, where whole populations are being moved around in this way. And that was part of what it was about. And there was definitely an effort to flood Germany with immigrants, and I guess many of them Jewish immigrants, coming from Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and in an attempt to sort of dilute German culture in the German population. There's no doubt about that. And that's by design. That's by design. And that's what they always want to do, because when they were able to use nationalism to their advantage, say in the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries, they used it. But now nationalism is a force that defends local government, which is home rule. So now it's globalism, which used to be called internationalism.
Right.
Well, now we're under 30 seconds. And so I don't know, do you guys, we had a lively discussion today. You want me to send out another invite or do you want to call it?
I got to go because I'm going over, and you guys should maybe.
Well, thanks for showing up and,